Hey Dylan, thanks so much for joining Suitcase Code of the podcast. I'm so happy to have you here. I know I had a blast being on your podcast, Self-Taught or Not, so I'm excited to have you here.
Welcome to Suitcase Code of the podcast. I'm Laura and I host this podcast where I track my journey from joining a coding bootcamp to becoming a remote developer. My ultimate goal in life is to travel the world and see as many countries as I can. But for now, I'm sharing what I've learned so far to hopefully help and inspire future techies, freelancers, and digital nomads. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get started.
Would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, so my name is Dylan Israel. I consider myself a self-taught developer. I've been working as a senior software engineer for about 5 years now. Currently work at PricewaterhouseCoopers. I do a lot of cool projects on the side with YouTube, podcasts, build courses, and I got two dogs. And that's pretty much the extent of my life.
I think having two dogs is the most exciting part. We'll start.
It's the only part that women seem interested in. As someone who's single, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that's cool that you, so what do you do for fun? Well, I build courses on software engineering. Well, what else do you do? Well, I do a YouTube channel on software engineering. And like, so, you know, the Tinder, the profile pics, it's just the dogs. It's none of the cool, like the stuff I think's cool, but I mean, they keep me sane. I love those guys. Make my life harder, but they're
it's the only thing outside of software development. Yeah, no, but I'm glad to have you on. I know you definitely have quite a lot going on with the courses. I've been seeing a lot of that on Facebook and just being promoted everywhere. How long have you been doing the courses?
Oh God, for like maybe 3 or 4 years now. So I started by doing some small ones for Scrimba, and this last year, 2020, if we want to call it a year, it's like this last plague of the earth. I've done 2 new email series for them that got them, you know, tens of thousands of people sign up. I worked on an update to a JavaScript course I did for them. I worked on they just recently launched their front end certificate degree program, like career prep program. I did a lot of that from a technical perspective, as well as the stuff I think is cool as the career perspective. But God, 3 or 4 years, I tried to one every couple months, one every 6 months, but I'm probably going to slow down in the near future.
Yeah, that's a lot, and a lot longer than I thought. I guess just I started seeing it on Facebook recently. So I was like, oh, this is new. That's fun. But I guess you've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah, it's people keep telling me that like I need to share this stuff, and like I do when I release it, but the truth of the matter, this is what really happened, is I added some of the senior directors at my organization and directors and people, just added them on LinkedIn, and then they saw something I shared, and then they, you know, talked to me about it. Next time I saw them, I was like, yo, this makes me look good. I should share this stuff more often. So whenever I get like, and it doesn't even have to be something big, like it's cool when I release a project, but you know, I got an email the other day from somebody who said, hey, I just want to thank you. I just got, you know, my big come up, my from junior to mid-level dev, and I appreciate the mentoring. You know, you share those things and, you know, inspire other people, as well as, you know, get some kudos to promote yourself.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm sure like that's such a good feedback to have. Cause like, obviously you do it for fun because you enjoy it and stuff, but then having that like unexpected little like kudos, like you're saying, that's always a good thing.
Yeah. One day when I actually care, I'm going to build a decent portfolio site. And then like, I keep track of these things on my LinkedIn under projects. So like, I don't lose track. And so I'll go through them and then I'll do like a timeline. It'll look impressive one day, but we're not quite there yet.
One day, bottom of the totem pole. Okay, so something that you talk about is how you started off and where you were before getting into coding. And then obviously like you're super successful now and have a lot of things going on. Do you mind if we rewind and have you talk about where you were before the world of coding, before your entire life was taken up by development?
Yeah, so I think I was pretty similar to a lot of people where they were a college student that really hated college. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I fell into the category of where I just half-assed college for about 6 years. And the way I sort of found out that I liked coding was not in a very sexy way. It wasn't like, oh, I did the X, Y, and Z and I fell in love with it. It was more of, I literally looked up what's the best degree to get based off the Bureau of Labor of Statistics or whatever it is, the BLS data. And it was like at that time, the top five jobs were like coding related, software related, biggest job growth, highest salaries. And I just changed my major to computer science. And going towards my senior year, wrapping up my junior year, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was so burnt out. I hated it. I was miserable. I was depressed. I was angry. I was just like all the negativity in one individual. And I was like, I got to figure out a way to get out of here. And I was like, I'm going to get an internship. I don't care where it is. I don't care, but I'm going to get an internship and then I'm going to get a job. And so I took an internship about 2 hours away that I had to be at 6 a.m. every morning. Ugh. At this place called Dolly Web Design. And, cool point to the kudos thing is I guessed it on the Six Figure Dev podcast a while back. And my manager at the time from a small web design shop still had my phone number. And he hit me up and he said, Dylan, I always knew you're going to be doing good on yourself. I just want to let you know, keep up the good work. And aww, he listened to the podcast. So I thought
that just gave me goosebumps. That's such a nice little circle moment.
Yeah. You know? And it was, from a short experience of 3 to 6 months to, 4 or 5 years later. But I made that drive and I worked hard. And I remember getting up at 3:30 a.m. for three months straight to do that and drive the 2 hours. And then, sometimes
you had to be there at 6, but in order to be there at 6, you had to wake up at 3 a.m.
Oh yeah. Which really shows you how that was a better scenario than continuing college. So not by much, but and it wasn't like I was getting paid any big bucks. I was getting paid $12 an hour, which I think I had a 2-door Ford Explorer at the time that just, I think I might have cost me $20 in gas a day to go around trip. And I do my days and I'd come back and I do again. I upped it, full time. And eventually they hired me to do some contract work. And I took my first dev job. And by the way, I wasn't out of college yet. I was doing this while doing school full time and, delivering pizzas. I'd been delivering pizzas for years, doing physical labor, selling bootleg DVDs at one point to friends.
Yeah, I definitely want to dive into that.
So eventually I would drop out of school, and then I spent about 9 months studying every single day, about 4 hours on weekdays and about 12 hours on a Saturday and Sunday each. And just through lots of lack of sleep and copious amounts of caffeine, eventually I started seeing people interview at my work, which was now a software shop where I was doing technical documentation and sort of a BA role. And I was like, yo, I can do that. And I asked them for a shot and they said they would give me one, and nothing happened in 6 weeks. And I just went and got a job across the country. I moved 3,000 miles away, 2 weeks later to Florida.
Man, that's such a crazy, but I feel more and more common story for developers. It's always a trajectory, where you start in this one place and then you somehow come across development, and then at the end of the day, you've made it. But I think that hill for a lot of beginners is an impossible hill.
I think what a lot of people suffer from is they only see the final goal and they don't realize all the milestones along the way. So I was defining how I was going to, it wasn't I'm a broke, miserable college student to, now I'm a successful senior engineer. There was a million steps in between, and you had to appreciate the wins, the internship, then the technical writer job, and then the job across country for okay pay, and then the jumping jobs, and the going to the free code camp meetups, and there's so many of these little events that happened along the way.
Oh yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about money today, is because I think so many people get into software development because of the money. And what my thought is, there's nothing wrong with that, right? But you have to be able to enjoy it. And you're saying, there's no quick, easy way to become a software developer other than putting in the time and actually committing through the program or, self-teaching. And one day eventually, yes, you can make big bucks, but it's not a quick transition.
Yeah. And it's kind of unfortunate because a lot of people are looking for a career change. They're looking to better their situation. And you see all these scummy gurus and shit that will say, you can go and make six figures in 3 months and you'll never, you know, you don't even know how to do addition and subtraction. Like, it's really, you yep. see this stuff and it's not, you know, like I'm doing great now. I'm making six figures and like, I have a house, I have no debt, all this sort of stuff. But like, started at $12 an hour, which to give you perspective is literally less than minimum wage today in the state. And so we were, you know, it's not like we were bawling out of control, but hard work, effort, and being very intentional to where you're going and what it is you're trying to accomplish. And I you know, to the money thing, one of the reasons I'm so open talking about it is I think it's sort of has a very negative tone to ever talk about money. Like, and the money won't make you happy, but it can buy you some fun. And usually poverty leads to sadness because, you know, you're not spending time with friends and family. You're stressing out, living paycheck to paycheck, which I think 80% of people are doing now, which yeah. astounds me. So, you know, it's not everything, but it's something.
No, and I totally agree. And I think that's what, I know that's something that we clicked on and when I was a guest on your podcast, is just that mentality of money and that it shouldn't be taboo topic. And I think the more we talk about it and the more open we are with just the and being realistic with the topic of money, I think can help so many people out. Because I mean, even within just this niche of like software development, right? Career switchers, which I'm definitely one of those. First of all, having everybody realize that it's not an overnight get money quick thing, but also understanding that the importance of money, and like you're saying, like it doesn't bring happiness, but it also gets you out of a state that could potentially be unhappiness for a long time.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you're one thing that people do when they start, you know, increasing their income is they increase their lifestyle, and they do it proportionally where, you know, oh, hey, I make $20,000 more a year. Doesn't mean go spend, you know, $1,600 more a month. It means, oh, great. Now, you know, get your life together and use that, you know, fund a retirement. And, you know, having been around family members and friends who have made poor financial decisions, you can see it on their face. That's all they're thinking about all the time. They have no mental energy for anything. They have to figure out how to do the bills. Like, nothing set up for auto pay, right? And I remember this. I remember it very clearly. I'm like, listen, okay, this is the rent check. This portion is the food check, and then we're gonna do some, you know, mathematical gymnastics for which bills are gonna get paid in which order. And you don't want to go through your whole life like that, you know.
Yeah, I do want to touch on something back when you were saying that you were still right before deciding to make kind of the switch. You said you were in college, you were on your sixth year.
Yeah.
And you were miserable.
Oh, so miserable so long.
Yeah. And so my question is, do you think you were miserable? Obviously you enjoy programming. You really enjoyed that even after, you know, you switched into computer science, but you were still miserable. So was it the college aspect that made you miserable? Obviously like the money, what was that breaking point that you're like, I need to leave. I need to go and do.
Yeah. A couple things. I mean, the truth of the matter is I was just sick of being broke and hungry. That was like, I just sort of hit a wall. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple moments where I just got really angry and upset with myself. One was when I was with my girlfriend at the time, and, you know, she and I lived together and we were buying groceries, and I mm-hmm. couldn't, I needed underwear. Like, I barely had any underwear and there's holes in them. And I literally had to put the underwear back because we didn't have enough for groceries. And that's just a moment that for some reason, like both these are food related. So I don't know if that says something about me, but that moment I will always remember. And another one was I was single at this time and my mother had to bring me groceries because I couldn't afford to feed myself and pay mm-hmm. my bills. And it wasn't like I was out there, you know, going to clubs or whatever kids do nowadays. I don't know. But it was, I was being as conservative as I could be with my money and working multiple jobs. And it's just this moment where I was ashamed of myself. Mm-hmm. I was angry with myself. And I just sort of said never again, like whatever it takes. And that was, you know, that second time was the moment where I went from like 2 hours a day to every single day for 9 months. And like, I was just disgusted with myself. And like, my rock bottom, I tell people all the time, hit a rock bottom. It's okay. The problem is people's rock bottoms are way too deep. Like, you got to figure out, you know, don't hit it and say, I think I got more. No, hit it, reflect on it, and then go back the other direction.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That's definitely like a moment to kind of wake up to and be like, okay, I can either, like you're saying, keep digging or do something to make that change. But you had already, I mean, by that point, it seems like you were already interested in computer science. You knew that that's kind of the path that you wanted to follow. You were just getting frustrated that obviously with a college degree, there's a sense of like, you have to finish this before you can go and be and do something.
Yeah, it's, I've learned that the sort of what things, the things that have made me successful is just sort of doing what I want to do and to go in the path. I want to build a course this month. I'll build a course. I want to start a podcast. I'll start a podcast. I want to do a YouTube channel, whatever it is, and choosing how I grow. But I'm growing and I'm doing one step forward. The college system, and you know, me and my co-host Eric argue about this all the time because I'm the self-taught. He's the not, for lack of a better, you know, self-taught or college taught might have been a better term, but it's not for everybody. And it's definitely not for me. And, you know, as someone who has done countless interviews now for candidates, there is something to be said for some people with degrees, but by and large, you know, the reason we only take people with experience is because the experience is more valued and that the degree program is more of a check mark than anything else. And I don't like wasting my time on check marks.
I was going to say, I think that's something that you could definitely repeat for the listeners, is that the degree, like if that's the way that you learn and you enjoy it and you want it, fine. But that there's definitely a way high, almost like a way higher and heavier value to the experience and just the commitment and the willingness to grow.
Yeah. And sometimes people think, oh, well, you have to have the degree to go work at these big tech companies. Not true at all. I have 4.5 years of dev experience. And in the last 2 months, I've had Microsoft, Google, Coinbase, Amazon all ask me to interview with them. Wow. And I don't have a degree and I'm not even applying. I don't even want to go.
Like, how come?
Oh, so I did want to go for the Google one and okay. I got to the final interview and it didn't work out. I was kind of sad.
But you were almost there.
I was so close. They told me I could interview again in 3 months if I wanted to, because right on the border. Oh my God. It was so long. So if I do it again, right now I'm moving. And if I was to do it again, I would consider it, but I'm going to want to put the time and energy in to make sure that I take it from a 50-50 shot to 100% shot.
Right.
Because doing, you know, 4 interviews and the last one was 6 hours of interviews, I don't want to do that again.
6 hours in one day?
Yeah. And so, you know, one hour lunch of that 6 hours. But right. It was, and it's all draining. It's all the same stuff. Algorithms, yeah. Algorithms, algorithms, algorithms. One cultural, right? I did good on the cultural.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? Right. Something like, if you do bad in the cultural, it's everyone, you need to see a therapist, because it's basically like, hey, are you a normal person that we're not going to be scared to work with?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess they're really like, you need to be human enough to have a conversation. And then more than anything, they care whether you're going to get the work done or not.
Yeah, I mean, the questions at most of these are like, what would you do in a conflict? I pull out my gun. Like, that's not the answer they're looking for.
Even if you can restrain yourself from answering that kind of thing, I think you're good to go and pass on.
Yeah, like, it's literally like, you know, well, I try to diffuse the situation and have a conversation. Like, that's what a normal person does.
Right.
It's not like, I'm going to put my left fist up and my right fist. You know, they don't want.
Oh, man. Imagine, like, the kinds of interviews they must go through to still be asking these kinds of questions.
I've probably have done maybe 75 or 100 interviews at this point in various jobs, and it's kind of scary how common you ask like normal people's jobs. So like, why do you want to leave your job? Because, you know, my effing boss. And I was like, all right,
that's like interview 101.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's,
man, yeah,
I don't get it. But
okay, so back to, I'm jumping right back in. Back to you taking on this internship, and like you said, it was very little pay. What advice would you give to anybody listening who kind of has that in their mind, where like they either spent months teaching themselves, or they went through boot camp or college, and they just don't feel like they deserve, or they feel like they deserve more than just like a minimum wage type of internship?
I mean, I would say like, you have to you know, who cares what you think you deserve? The market rate is what you can earn. And if what you can get at that time is minimum wage, take it, assuming that you're not leaving, you know, 60, 70,000 year job or whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? And you're just getting an entry-level job. Entry-level doesn't mean high pay, in my opinion. It means we're giving you a shot and do exactly what I did, jump jobs. You know, in the 4.5 years, I've had 5 jobs or 4 jobs. And the idea being that get the experience, because the experience is what's going to get you the income. And mm-hmm. once you do that, you know, who cares? You made $12 an hour for 6 months or 3 months. But after that, get the experience, gain your skills, get paid to work on those skills, and then go from 12 to 24, 24, 36, 36, 48, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I guess it definitely does go back to those like milestones that you talk about in being able to get to those six figure salaries. You have to go through these kinds of milestones.
Yeah, and it's, people get so caught up on like, what's a good starting salary, this or that for your first job, whatever they will give you. Like literally, don't be super picky, but don't be stuck and stay at that job for 6 years either. Everyone I've known who has put in extended period of time at their first job, they're making half as much as a developer who, you know, jumped a job or two. And I'm not saying just jump jobs for the sake of jumping jobs, but if there's a financial reason, go and do it. That money is for you to pay down maybe your student loans, you know, save for a home. Dear God, have 3 to 6 months expenses. It's a crazy world we live in, right? Like pay off your car. Have some of us have kids or are planning to have kids, getting ready for that. My parents are getting older. I'm going to have to support them. I have no shame about jumping jobs, and neither should anybody else.
Yeah, that's definitely was something I was going to bring up as well, is so many people are scared. I don't know if it's scared is the right word, but scared to jump jobs. That also, like, there's this fear, I think, I don't know at what point, but there's this fear set into us that like you have to stick with a job for a certain amount of years. And that's just not the case at all anymore. Especially I feel like with developers, like you're saying, like there's a need to jump to grow. Like, I feel like that's the only way to do it.
I mean, statistically speaking, as far as incomes go, it's been proven that jumping jobs will get you a higher income faster. So, you know, keep that in mind. And the truth of the matter is those entry-level jobs, they're going to be startups. They're going to be smaller companies. And, you know, some people are going to like startups, but if you talk to the majority of devs who work at like startups, I'm not talking like Uber. I'm talking about like real, like, hey, we have a year of funding. Right. These are the most toxic places you'll ever work. And you'll be working 60, 70 hours a week. And sometimes they'll tell you, sometimes they'll lie to you and you'll interview and they'll say, yeah, we're expecting 60, 70 hours a week. Okay. Like, that's cool. I'm good, dog. Like, I, so like, you don't want, and but that's why you need to leave those, get your foot in the door, get the experience, and then right. go on to a better and healthier place.
Yeah, that's true. And it's toxic, but you know, for yourself kind of going into it, that should kind of give you that peace of mind that you're, it may be toxic, but you know, you're going to give yourself like a 6 month deadline or something like that, you know, to where you can get out.
Yeah. I think people have a fear of quitting things, and you know, you can, you know, how many, I know a lot of people have been in toxic relationships, myself included, for the record. Occasionally you have to leave them mm-hmm. and move on to something better. And when you do, you'll find out that, you know, the baggage, and you oftentimes don't even realize you're carrying it, where every day you're coming home from work and you're not doing the things you used to love to do. And I never really caught on to it until I had a tech lead I work with who is miserable. And he said, this place is making me miserable. And the way I know is I used to love coding and I'd go home and code and I haven't done it in a year. And I was like, yo dog, I haven't done it in 3 months. You're right. This place is killing me.
A little light bulb moment right then.
Yeah. And so usually what ends up happening nowadays is whenever I start to be like, oh, you know, you have ups and downs, but you're like, I don't even want to touch this anymore. You know, I don't want to make a video. That's when I'm like, yo, something's wrong here.
Yeah, there's definitely a breaking point for everybody. And I think everybody knows their limits. And it's kind of like you said, like people keep digging themselves like further into this like miserable hole. When reality, you need to realize when you've hit rock bottom or even like prematurely hit that and be able to jump ship. Do you have any thoughts on how to manage with the companies? Like, do you usually go, obviously you're not going to go into an interview and be like, okay, I'm only going to be here for 3 months and I'm going to peace out. How do you deal with like the company relationship?
Yeah. So first, I think it's just getting yourself in the right mentality. is understanding that organizations are going to do what's best for their bottom dollar. They're not charities, right? And even if they are, you still have to make a return on value. And they're going to cut you if they have to. And it's probably not going to be personal. It's probably just going to be business. And for some reason, there's this sense of loyalty from the employee that goes to the employer that doesn't, it's not reciprocal, or it's definitely not equal. And just to understand that. And so to say that you can't like your workplace, and, you know, like I happen to actually really like the current place I'm at. But it is to say that you need to be in that mentality. Now, when you're interviewing and then, you know, they say, what is it that you're looking for? I usually am honest, but it's all about how you phrase it, right? Like, you know, it's the old stupid joke of like, well, what are you looking, you know, why do you want to work for us? And it's like, right. Well, because I have rent and I don't like being hungry, right? Like, that's not a good answer. You might say something along the lines of, you know, I'm very interested in the technologies. Glassdoor has some, you know, some highly rated benefits and reviews. And you can talk about certain things that may not be your direct hire. And if they ask you point blank, you know, we see why you stayed at your last job, give them, you know, an honest answer. I've gotten this question at pretty much every place I've worked at, because it's been anywhere from 9 months to a year. And the answer I give is, I did everything in a year. I saw where I was going to be 5 years down the road, and I didn't want to, it's not a place I want to be for 5 years. I learned and I grew, and I there's nothing really wrong, but there's nothing really right. And I'm looking for a place that I can be at for an extended period of time.
That makes all the difference in how you phrase it. And being, I feel like I'm very to the mindset that you have to be honest in interviews, just like you want them to be honest with you. And I'm also like, I always mention that an interview should be both ways. You should be able to ask the company about, you know, like their benefits and their reviews and how they structure their day, as much as they're asking you a bunch of stuff, because you're going to be going in every day and putting in the time and the work. And so I think it's important to like remember that, that it is a two-way street and it's okay to be honest. Obviously, if you want the job, you have to like phrase it correctly, but just being honest with them and keeping it a two-way street.
And as far as like, when you lie in an interview, it's usually pretty apparent. Like, and no one wants to hire a liar. Like, you can sugarcoat things and that's fine. You can sort of, you know, you can even decline to answer a question, and you know that you don't have a good answer. He's like, you know, to be honest, I don't really know. I, you know, maybe I should think about it, and I'll shoot you an email when I have an answer. That's better than just lying, because once that someone figures out that you're lying to them, it doesn't matter how well you did in the interview, you're a liar now and they don't want to be associated with you.
That's so true. That's a good point. The email, I've never thought about that. Like, I've thought about like, you know what, I'm being honest, I don't really know right now. But giving them the option to be like, I can email you. I'm sure they'll say no half the time. Like, no, we don't really want you emailing us.
Well,
but
well, you can do this in technical interviews as well on some of the questions. And this is especially good for junior developers, where you say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. It's not something I come across to, but after this interview, I'm going to go home, I'm going to study it, and then I'm going to send you my answer, just so that you can see I have the ability to comprehend something. And that usually will speak a lot to your character. It may make the difference between you and another candidate.
I was going to say, that's a really good piece of advice that I have never heard before. You hear a lot of different tips and tricks for interviews, especially for technical interviews, because there's so much, especially for a junior developer. But that's a really good one, because if you go quick enough and you actually take the time and learn the question, get back to them, they're probably still going through the hiring process. And that just kind of brings you back into the pool of potential employers.
It's not going to hurt, right? Like, and a lot of times people, they take this mentality of like, oh, I could have wasted 2 hours, but you're going to learn something. It's only going to be a benefit. No one's going to be like, man, that guy said he didn't know anything. Then he sent me an email saying he learned a little something about it. That's only going to help. It can't hurt you.
Right. Right. No, that's a good point. You're obviously self-taught. When did you like feel like you made it, or is imposter syndrome a forever thing? Or were you at least like stable enough to be like, yeah, I'm a software developer? I feel like that's a big question, especially for self-taught.
When I had 3 six-figure offers on the table at the same time, that was probably the boss moment, where I was like, all right, I'm either getting really good at fooling these dudes, or like, you know, I'm at least doing something right. It's sort of a strange question, because it assumes that you move past it. But usually the thing about imposter syndrome is it can be very healthy. It can be something where you work hard to eliminate it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have this doubt and you're like, I'm sick of this doubt, and you work hard to become better. And then it comes back because you continue to challenge yourself. So you know, when I interview with some of these big tech companies, I get a little feeling of it, like, like they seem to be interested and whatnot, but like, what, you know, maybe I'm not up to par with, you know, XYZ company developer. And as I go and I try to move into a managerial role or a tech lead role, I'm sure it will sink in a little bit there. And the thing about growth is it's uncomfortable, right? It's I mean, I hate to use this analogy, but like if you think about puberty, where you go from a girl to a woman or a boy to a man, it's a very profound transformation from a biological sense.
Yeah.
But like it's super uncomfortable, right? Like at the end, you come out a different and, you know, in theory, a better person.
Right.
And you mature. And it's sort of the same way. But there are a lot of people who sometimes they suffer with imposter syndrome way too long, like a decade plus.
Yeah, I think I know, because I know that's obviously something that comes up with any developer, every developer, especially when you're starting off and like, especially at the beginning stages, it's almost like this never ending like finish line that you'll never reach. But it's a good way to put it and change the mentality and saying, instead of having it be something that I'll never reach, having it be something to drive you forward and push you to grow. And like you're saying, being comfortable and become a better developer from it.
Yeah, and celebrate those milestones as well, right? So like, if all you ever look at is the goalpost, that's always should be moving, right? We always should be trying to move forward in some direction. It may not even be your professional, right? It may be the family and kids and, you know, being a homeowner, whatever it may be. But like, the goalpost is always going to be moving, but celebrate, you know, every 10 yards or whatnot that I did what I said I was going to do. And the next thing, I'm going to do that too.
Yeah, no, I like that for sure. And you had mentioned, okay, so you got 3 6-figure offers around the same time. How far into your journey was that?
2 years.
2 years. So when you, okay, when you self-taught, did you have a curriculum that you followed? What was that like? Because I know that's one of the biggest things that people struggle with is like, they'll have all the drive and the willingness to sit down and learn and teach themselves. But especially with development and the internet, there's so many options to choose from. How did you narrow that down and just kind of like say, this is where I'm starting and this is where I'm getting to?
Yeah, so this sort of starts with my YouTube channel where I was so broke. And I don't recommend people do this, but I was so broke that I even refused to buy like a Udemy course. So when I quit school, paying all my own bills and working a full-time job, is all I did was the free courses on Udacity, YouTube, Codecademy, and Free Code Camp. And I just did it all. I was like, if I can program in 3-4 different languages, at least I'll understand the syntax. So I did, you know, C#, I did or C++, Python, PHP, JavaScript, whatever the programming languages were on Codecademy. And then I found Free Code Camp. And this is when they had their, I think they now called their legacy front end cert. And it's sort of strange where I was like, I built my first project on Free Code Camp. It never even occurred to me to build a project. Like, it's just something like, oh, build something. No, I'll just do these tutorials. And after the first one, that was really when I fell in love with it. And before, it was just like, this is a good career path. But when I built my first project and I was crying because I couldn't understand what API was, I was working my job and I was doing a weather project. And I spent like 20 hours just not understanding what to Google, not understanding how it worked, what it was. And I just remember like slamming my keyboard and crying and just having a moment. And I went in on Monday and I asked one of the developers, and in about 30 seconds, he explained it and I got it like that. And that was sort of the moment where it was like, I just instantly fell in love. But I think Free Code Camp's a great curriculum to look at. Even now, I know they just added their Python stuff. I haven't for more of a data science, data analytics platform, but generally speaking, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, if you want to get started in web development, you have to pick up HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You're going to need to pick up a in-demand front-end framework, most likely React, Vue, or Angular. I probably would recommend you pick up TypeScript as well. You're going to need to know version control with Git. At that point, you're actually probably good to be a front-end dev if you can build projects using that. Then you go to the back end, which that's where there's going to be a little bit more variety. You know, Node, MongoDB, Express, or Nest.js, or some Node framework for you know, full mean or mern stack. But the backend's also dominated by SQL and C# or Java. But for the most part, if you do that front end portion, you can supplement a backend and get your foot in the door and then develop your skill set from there.
Right. I think the last like 30 seconds of you just listing out the things that you in the order that you need to learn them is gold. And I think people spend way too long trying to research what should I learn next. And in 30 seconds, you just kind of like laid it out for everybody. And I also use free code camp myself, and it's gold. I love it. And I recommend it. Times over.
And if you're ever curious what to learn, it's really simple. Go see who people are hiring want you to learn. And so that's how I got started. And I was like, okay, where can I learn these technologies? And I looked at 100, 200 apps on LinkedIn for junior front end developer. Mm-hmm. I made my little list with the scratches, and then do the diagonal across at 5. I don't know what the name for that is.
Tally marks?
Tally marks. We'll say the tally marks. So do the tally marks. And I did I ordered. I said, okay, out of the 200, I got, 100 in here. I got 20 in here. So this is required. This is preferred. And like, I did it like that, because at the end of the day, awesome. If you're trying to go and get a job, just see what the job wants and go. Like, who cares what you think you should learn? If your goal is to work for somebody else and to get a paycheck, which is fine. That's what I do. Learn what people want you to learn, and then go and by doing that also, there's a lot of things that are very niche that don't really matter. Like, they're nice to haves. And the people who, create these job apps, they don't understand the difference. And so you learn what the nice to haves are and what are the required by getting it together. And then you can now be more applicable to more jobs to get your foot in the door. Because getting your foot in the door is going to be pretty hard.
Right. I think that's definitely the hardest part for anybody in any industry, not even web development, but I feel like especially web development because of those technical interviews. But yeah, that's a really good idea, is going through the kinds of jobs, looking at it, what your end goal is, which in many cases is get a job, looking at what they require and kind of working backwards at it that way. Yeah. So when you started, were you front end?
When I started, was I front end developer? Is that the question?
Yeah. I'm regretting
that. So my first role was technically full stack, but at that time I hadn't done any database work or any really services. And I started there, and I was at my first role for about 10 months. And the first 3 months or so, I did primarily front end, but I wanted to do more and more back end. And I got, your first role is always fun because you get introduced to shit you never even knew existed. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, oh, hey, we want you to, do unit testing. Great. What is that? And then you start looking up like, oh, we've test our code. Like, I thought I just clicked through the app to test my code. And they, at that time I did PHP, Cake PHP, and MySQL, which was the last time I would ever do that. One of the reasons I left that job. So I did start out front end, although I did do full stack, and my career keeps bringing me to the front end. So I'm technically doing full stack, but I do about 90% front end nowadays, because it seems like back end developers don't want anything to do with the front end.
That's
like,
what I hear. Yeah.
It's like, I don't mind working in the back end. It's not I wouldn't say it's where my expertise lies, but like, I can do it. But like, back end developers, like, keep that plague over there. Let me work in the back end. All right.
Yeah. I remember what I was going to ask you. You mentioned that when you did your first project on Free Code Camp, that was like a major eye opener to you. What was it like? Like, after that, did you start creating more and more projects? Is that kind of how you build up your portfolio?
Yeah. So when I got my first dev job, I think I had 4 or 5 projects that were based off of the Free Code Camp.
Were they like the typical like weather?
Yeah.
The weather API to-do list.
They were, but the one that stood out more than anything else was my YouTube channel. And that's been the key for me getting my foot in the door. It's how I got my internship. When I got my first internship, there's two reasons he hired me. One was that the other candidate with the CS degree didn't want to be there at 6 a.m. for the interview, and said, I come in at 10 for the interview, and that pissed him off. And the other was that he, even though I didn't have a degree or any relevant experience, is that I had, I think, 300 subscribers at the time or something like that, but I had about 200 videos of just me doing Codecademy tutorials, and like, clearly here I was a kid who's trying to learn and trying to grow. Yeah. And when I went and I got my first industry role as a technical writer and like sort of BA, I had 600 subscribers not too much longer, and here I am doing videos on software, which they're going to pay me to do videos on their software. And then when I got my job all the way across country, there's two things that really got them. One was I built a website that's still around today, It's not great, but if you want to check it out, codingtutorials360.com.
Repeat that because I interrupted you.
Codingtutorials360.com. It's an old AngularJS site I haven't touched in about 5 years, like since I built it. And all it is it like used a YouTube API to put up my YouTube channel stats and things like that, and like, you know, links. And that was one of the technologies they were working in. And then my YouTube channel, where they could go and see not only me narrating my code, but actually writing code and being passionate, and see that like, oh, here's someone I can probably work with who seems normal enough. And those starter projects that we were discussing, those are there for you to learn. And like, if that's all you have, great. The problem is people just never go and build something of their own. And that's what people care about. That's where like, okay, so you didn't watch a YouTube video to build this, right? And so many projects you see are like, you just watched someone else build this and they said you did.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But that's kind of how I started off with my YouTube channel as well, is just the idea of showing that you can talk about your code, which it goes back to the interview thing where it makes you more human and it makes you like actually interested in what you're doing and be able to communicate that. So I think that's a great idea. That's definitely how I started, the idea of starting a YouTube channel came from me.
Yeah, it was, I can't really take full credit for the idea. My buddy Matt Tran at the time was like coming over to my apartment, and he was going through Dev Mountain Coding Bootcamp. Mm-hmm. And so we like studied together. And at some point he was telling me about the money he was making. And I was like, why don't I just do this? Like, you know, like it's at the very least, I'll learn something. I'll do it twice as much, and it'll be a cool video portfolio. And that's sort of how I got my started with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you said, if it's okay to ask, did you actually make any money off of YouTube?
Like then or now?
I guess both.
Yeah. So back in the day, I think I was making like $50 a month, which wasn't a ton, but I was stoked. Let me tell you.
That's a lot. I haven't gotten to near, I mean, I have like maybe 300 subscribers now.
Yeah. But I was, when you're making like, when your paychecks are like $700 or whatnot, $50 feels like you got a bonus and it feels good. But nowadays, yeah. So, YouTube's interesting because you make the majority of your money off YouTube. And so, like AdSense ad revenue, I think I get nowadays around $500-$600, although it's peaked as high as like 13. But then you have courses, which average around $1,000 there. Then you have affiliate links, a couple hundreds there. And then you have, you know, like I do mentoring, and then I have one-off courses that come about. And
right.
You know, like the YouTube channel gave me opportunities to build courses with Scrimba, with LinkedIn Learning. Mm-hmm. And you know, all this other stuff, and it's all about how you sort of monetize it. And
right, you know, it's more of a platform for you to continue growing outward exactly. From there. So when you obviously like your financial kind of journey has been everyone's dream. Did you at any point start, you know, besides the YouTube, thinking about like passive income, or was your first goal, I just need a salary that can get me my basic needs, and then like the passive income stuff came later?
Oh yeah, I started thinking about passive income before I was even a developer. So my first role, as in that technology trainer role, I got paid like $45,000. I was barely in California, just barely scraping by in Los Angeles, and but I was putting like $500 a month away into like peer-to-peer lending, which, by the way, I didn't make any money in. I don't recommend on a side note, but the goal was to make passive income. But once I came to Florida, I came in my little 3-cylinder Mitsubishi Mirage, and I stayed with a bunch of college kids that were doing crazy stuff. And I finally saved up, got an apartment, you know, got furniture, got on my feet, all that sort of stuff. Supported my girlfriend at the time, who had came out with no job. From that point on, once I saved up sort of an emergency fund, the very first thing I did was I paid off my car loan. That was the only debt I had at that time. So I think it was like $4,000. I paid that off.
Good for you.
At that point, I then started investing immediately, and I didn't have as much money as I, you know, it always feels like, oh, I got a 40% raise. Like, no, you kind of got like a 20% raise after the increased taxes.
Oh yeah.
And so I did start investing in stocks and a little bit of cryptocurrencies at that time. Nowadays, my passive income, all the money I make outside of my job goes into either paying down my mortgage or goes into investments. I don't want to ever live off the passive income streams I want, because I want to make sure that I'm living below my means. So I save about 40% of all my money, maybe a little bit more at times, depending on what bonuses and increases in income come. Mm-hmm. But between stocks and properties, and I'm looking at potentially buying a second home and sort of having I'll have a rental property. But in passive income is always the goal, and it should be for everybody. Otherwise, you're just, I mean, I'm 32. I already feel old and tired. I can't even imagine being.
Yeah. 50. I'm turning 30 in a couple months, and I'm like, it's too late.
it's not, though. And like, we always, Steve Harvey said this much more elegantly than I will. But he said something along the lines of, you may not be where you want to be, but if you're moving forward, when the time comes, you'll be happy where you are. And like, I wish I had more money, and I wish I invested I just invested like $200 a month while I was delivering pizzas for 8 years, and I'd have just as much money as I have now as a software engineer, which is crazy. Yep. But if you invest, like the stat that I find crazy is that if you start investing like $500 a month into like ETFs and mutual funds, from 30 by age 70, and you do that, you never take it out, you just reinvest everything, you have like $5 million with 11% return or something like that. Like, it's the compound interest will build up.
Isn't that crazy? And that's the thing. Like, the thing is, even if you think it's too late, like I often do, the idea is just to start. And like you said, start. And I really like what you said about having like your salary be your how you live, right? And then have this passive income work almost like as a bonus, and it's working for you. It's working on its own. Like, you have it there, but you're not dependent on it.
Yeah. And that goes to keeping your, like, what's the point of you working extra hours just to be as broke?
Right.
Like I've essentially killed my relationships by working as much as I have. And like, at least I'm in a better financial position. But if I was in a worse financial position and alone, that doesn't seem like any trade-off. So you got to be smart with it. You got to control your money. And if you don't know what to do, it's really simple nowadays to invest. You don't need to have a super crazy financial coach. Eliminate your debt, all debt, because then you'll have, you know, you won't, I'm a big believer of like the Dave Ramsey plan, where there's no smart debt.
Yep.
Like, I think you're playing with fire a lot of times. And so just limit your debt, have it, you pay it off. And guess what? You have more money every month. With that extra money, lower your cost of living. Rent out rooms in your home. You know, like, I was renting out two of my rooms in my house, and my mortgage for a brand new house was cost me $300 a month. And then I just threw that money at the mortgage as if it wasn't there. I didn't go and buy a new car. I still, up until about 6 months ago, had my 3-cylinder Mitsubishi Mirage that I was driving around it.
So. That's awesome. No, yeah, I think you're spot on. I think I agree. A whole bunch with you is paying off that debt and just being like planning ahead as much as you can. And if ahead is like too big of a thing to handle, just deal with what you can right now. Even a little bit of what you have now, I think, goes a long way in the future. Like, don't wait until you're at the perfect salary point to start investing or start thinking about these things.
Yeah. And you can start small. Like, it doesn't have, you don't have to ramp up to, like, most people aren't going to do 40% of their income. That's right. But you know, it is recommended that you, by most investors, to save 15% just for retirement. And if you're don't have a plan for retirement, then like, you're going to be working all your life, and that's just depressing. Mm-hmm. And the idea being that, especially when you're younger, like, now is the time where you can really save. Like, no husband, no wife, no kids. You know, this is the time where you can have roommates and you can, you know, start doing some of this stuff where you make yourself a little bit more uncomfortable, but now you're able to throw $2,000-$4,000 a month into something and ramp up and have it grow pretty quickly.
Oh yeah. No, I completely agree. I feel like saying congratulations on like your entire journey and like having hit rock bottom and then making it to where you are now. And then like, just as you go, you continue to grow. And I'm definitely inspired by everything that you're doing.
Yeah, I would say, I know we've talked a lot about like careers and money and growth. It's mm-hmm. just an education process. And like, you don't have to be super educated. Nowadays, you can get a book for $10. It'll teach you, you know, the secrets of almost anything.
And oh, like, yeah. Not even $10. The libraries yeah. have free like apps. I just found mine out and I've been in love with it. It's like a free app and you just download it straight to your Kindle and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's all out there. And like the freemium model on YouTube of like, you have experts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think about the fact that you have somebody who gets paid six figures that will put a free tutorial on a topic that someone pays them $100,000, $200,000 a year to work in. And you can watch it for free. And most of you watch ad blocker. Like, you don't even get ads. And at the end of the day, you can become knowledgeable in all these things. And same goes for financials, your education. One thing I'm trying to do is back to my toxic relationships is I am reading relationship books right now. And so that has been something that I am trying to approach because I think I am a believer that with enough effort and energy that you can approach a relationship, like you can almost approach like a technical skill.
Right. So no, like, I agree. And it falls into this whole, like, I mean, I feel like I went through a lot of like self growth, quote unquote, going through like doing this career switch, because in a way I hit my own rock bottom and I was like, all right, I either need to change something and grow from it. And then once I started like going into development and realizing that you can learn anything online, it just like opened up an entire world. I was like, every one of my developer related questions is on Google somewhere. I just have to know how to find it. And then like applying that to literally everything, including relationships and communication skills, whatever it is, finances. And that was just like a huge eye opener for me.
Yeah. And the thing about, you know, success is that it's important to surround yourself with like-minded people. And there are people who are going to want you to fail because they didn't have the effort and energy, or mm-hmm. they didn't succeed because they gave up too early. And, you know, one moment I think about is about 6 weeks before I got my first dev job. I called my ex-girlfriend and I told her, I don't know that I can do this. And, you know, bless her heart, she said, I think you can. And 6 weeks later, I got my dev job. And if I'd given up, my whole life would have been, you know, changed. I would have stayed in this technology trainer role in California, scraping by. But, you know, it sounds kind of stupid, but you don't make it until you do. And you just have to sort of take one step forward and believe and eliminate the doubt that it's like, it's not a matter of if I'm going to become a developer or if I'm going to be successful or a millionaire or whatever your definition of success is, or if I'm going to get married and have kids. It's I'm going to, I just don't know when, but I'm doing all the right things. So right. I will be that.
Right. No, I totally agree. As long as you, and I have a whole episode on that, is like how important it is knowing your why and setting your goals. Because once you have something that's driving you from your like personal will to want to do it, then like you said, there's a way. Where there's a will, there's a way. Like, that's so cheesy, but if you have something that you're working towards, as long as you're working towards it, then you're on the right track, and there's no shame in that.
Yeah, it's and if you ever like, and there's always been I have these things about negative role models. Like, this is something I speak about all the time, because mm-hmm. it's much easier to give up when you're chasing a dream. But it's harder to do that when you're running like hell from a nightmare. And so there are people I've come across that they may not even know that I use them from years ago of people I don't want to be like, and, you know, situations I don't want to be in. Oftentimes not even judging them, but just using them as a reference. And some of these people may be your closest friends and family. And they, you know, it's just one of those items where if you have these things in the back of your mind where you do want to give up and you're tired and you're like, you know what? I just want to YOLO it. All right. I see these people, they're buying, you know, hundreds of dollars on clothes, or, you know, they're going out to eat every day at, you know, $50 meals, $100 meals, which is fine. Enjoy yourself on occasion, but why not just hold back, put the hard work in, and then you can do that every day if you want.
No, I'm so, yeah, I totally agree. And it's, in a way, it's kind of like a positive, non-judgmental comparison to other lifestyles that you're choosing not to have, which I think, like you said, it can be a good thing because you learn from other people and you learn what you enjoy, what you want out of life and what you don't, more importantly.
Yeah. And if someone's, if you're lucky enough to be around someone who's an idiot that will show you what not to do, don't do it. Like, it's fine. And if you're around, if you surround yourself with successful people where you can now grow and learn and, you know, you want to be like, or, you know, you see the right direction, surround yourself with those people and you'll be more like those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. We're actually about right on time. Is there anything that you would want to say, touch on, promote?
Promote? I mean, sure. Check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/codingtutorials360. But the only thing I would say is, you know, we've talked a lot about money. And if you don't know where to get started, I'm not a financial advisor, but right, that's a shameless disclaimer. but just go and buy ETFs of the S&P 500 and say, you know what, if the stock market goes up, it goes up, great, like as a whole, and you don't have to worry about it. It's gonna do better than just spending your money. Don't go and when you get your first dev job, get a brand new car, eliminate all debt, you know, put money into income earning assets, whether it's a home purchase or you know, stocks and ETFs or mutual funds. These are things that you can go and transform your life in a decade where all of a sudden you have $250,000 in the bank that's making you $25,000 a year pretty quickly. And if you do that early on in your career, you know, by the time you're 40, if you get a job at 20, you'll be making, you know, what you were making as your first junior or mid-level role every year, and it'll be passive and you'll be able to smile with your success for all those people that gave you shit back in the day.
Oh yeah. No, this is some really gold kind of advice and tips here that I really enjoy. There's a lot of good content in this episode. So I appreciate you coming on and talking about all those good stuff. And one disclaimer I do want to say is, talking about like money and things, I know that you were obviously self-taught in Free Code Campus Free, and there's so many ways to learn online for free. So if that's something that you can and want to do and are disciplined enough to do, then definitely check that out as an option. I myself went through bootcamp, which is by no means cheap, but I also talk highly about the importance of like saving up before deciding to join a bootcamp and seeing if you like coding rather than just quitting your job, spending a ton of money on a bootcamp and then realizing you don't like it halfway through. Now you're jobless and in debt, or you know, lost a couple $1,000s. So there's definitely like the two options, but just be financially smart about it and plan ahead.
You bring up a good point as well, is that if people had to pay cash for things, they'd be much more selective with what they pay cash for, right? Like when I buy a car, I pay cash, so I do a little bit more research. I make sure to get a deal. But like it's so weird that you can be 18, have no job experience, and they'll just give you as much money as you want as long as you give that money to a college. So think about where your money is going. And when you've had to work for that $20,000 or that $10,000, $5,000 or that $100, whatever it be, you'll be a little bit more selective about where it goes.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like I said, that was a really good episode. I think there was a lot of really good advice and just good conversation in it. I appreciate having you on here so much, and I feel like I could continue talking to you for a couple hours more about, there's just so much. So thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, anytime.